everybody who listens and everybody who donated last week during our summer campaign. It is very kind of you all. I hope that you will keep listening, and I hope you'll keep listening to my show, Mental Health Matters. This show is dedicated to exploring any topic that is related to mental health. I talk about situations that affect mental health, explore options to strengthen all of our mental health, describe various emotional disorders that disable so many individuals all over the world. I talk about relationships, both good and bad, addiction, sexuality, and also the kinds of things that are deemed immoral, but from a mental health perspective. Sometimes I have a guest, and sometimes I speak from my own body of knowledge. I am an LCSW, and I've practiced in Richmond since 1979. After I introduce a topic, I open the phones to you, the listener, to ask questions or weigh in on the subject. Or I love when you suggest a topic for a future show, and I love it when you send me questions even on the email, because I can then address them in a later show if you're not comfortable calling during the show itself, or if it's not related specifically to the show. The number at which to reach us today is 649-9737, 649-9737. Remember, Mental Health Matters comes to you every Thursday at 1 p.m. on WRIR 97.3 FM on your radio dial here in Richmond, Virginia. You can also listen to the program in real time by logging onto WRIR's website, www.wrir.org. The show will be available for you to listen to by this evening, along with all of my past shows, except for those two shows I still haven't archived, but I promise to do that tonight, by logging onto my website. You can get to my website by logging onto WRIR's website and just clicking on my show. You can also send me an email that way. I look forward to hearing from you. 2 weeks ago, I talked about the death penalty, and I got a lot of really about the emotional aspects of why some people are so opposed and why some people are so for the death penalty. And I got some very interesting mail. And next week, I'm going to share some of that with you. But this week, I have a wonderful guest, somebody who's gutsy enough to come here and talk about a subject that people aren't always talking about for a lot of reasons, and that's the subject of postpartum depression. You know, most women in the aftermath of having a child have such a barrage of feelings, good and bad and up and down and sweet and sour and scared to death and excited as can be, and yet the topic of getting sad after a baby's born, it's funny, I'm thinking of the word for getting a little addled, and all I can think of is these Yiddish words keep coming to my head, which is getting a little famished, which means in English to be just getting a little confused about what you're doing. All these things are ubiquitous to the aftermath of pregnancy, the aftermath of having the child, and yet we don't talk so much about it. Now, for some reason, for some women, a percentage of women get so depressed or so famished, a friend of mine calls it postpartum dementia, that it really becomes a problem. And this young woman that we have on today, her name is Jill Parker. She's a lovely woman. She's got two beautiful sons, 7 and 8 years old. And she really struggled with this. And she's here today to talk a little bit about what it felt like to have postpartum depression. Jill, thank you for coming and welcome to the show.
Thanks, Gail, so much for the opportunity to speak about this important subject.
You know, the statistics on postpartum depression are varied and unclear. Some sites say 5%, some sites say 25% of women report symptoms of depression in the first few months after they've given birth. Apparently, some say up to 80% have some kind of blues or a shifting in affect after a mild or transitory moodiness, and that's called baby blues. So how did you know that you really had depression and it was more severe than baby blues?
Well, in most women, the baby blues occurs in about the first 3 months after giving birth. My situation was very different in that my postpartum depression didn't start until I stopped nursing my second child. And that was around 14 months postpartum.
Very interesting. So when did the depression hit you all at once, or was it more insidious and came on little by little?
It was definitely more insidious. It came on little by little, and I really wasn't able to identify it because it didn't fit the mold of what everyone expects is the baby blues. And I also had some other things going on in my life at the same time that could be classified as traumatic. We had a fire in our home, and I think that caused really a pileup of issues that contributed to the postpartum.
No, say that again, that you had, say again what you just said, that you had a bunch of things happen all at once that piled up, is that what you said?
Right.
Okay, that's what I thought. Okay. And that contributed to it.
I believe so.
Okay. So, do you think that you in particular, and you talk about having a bunch of issues that might have piled up, do you think that you may have been predisposed to postpartum depression?
Yes, I feel I was predisposed because I was being treated for a low-level depression at the time with an SSRI, which is fairly common. And also, one of the items that I experienced that I believe did contribute to the postpartum depression was that I had a stressful event that is one of the signs that is stated to be contributory towards the postpartum depression. And that is that when I had my second child, I hemorrhaged and I lost about 50% of my blood. So, it was really touch and go in terms of had I lost that much blood from a gunshot wound or a stab, I wouldn't be alive. But during pregnancy, you produce more blood, so I pulled through.
One of the things that contributes to postpartum depression, if I may just say this piece of it, is that giving birth in and of itself can be stressful. Many things happen during birth that are traumatic to a woman's body. And that is definitely, even having a C-section sometimes exacerbates an individual's propensity to have postpartum depression. Okay, good point. Okay.
And, some of the symptoms that we normally associate with postpartum depression, sadness, fatigue, changes in rest and sleeping patterns, crying episodes, anxiety, irritation. But there's also other thoughts and feelings that can occur, which is down the road towards maybe a more serious postpartum. And that would be, if you have significant anxiety, maybe you have negative feelings towards the baby, you have a problem completing tasks or even doing tasks at home and work, your energy is very low, your concentration is very low, you may feel worthless or guilty, you may feel withdrawn or disconnected, and you may have a lack of pleasure in things that you used to enjoy doing.
Did that happen to you?
Yes.
Okay.
And, of course, on the very severe end would be thoughts of suicide or death.
Or hurting the baby.
Or yourself, correct.
Yes. So did that start to come in on you little by little?
It started to come in little by little, but then at one point, there really was a climax and everything sort of occurred at the same time.
Were people patient with you? Did the doctors have a name for it? Those are two different questions. I'm sorry to ask both at a time.
As far as being patient, I had a really hard time getting support because, one, I couldn't even identify what was going on with me. I just knew I wasn't normal. Something was happening. As far as, and because it was so far from when I gave birth originally. The other thing is that it was extra difficult because, you know, the expectation, quote unquote, would be that, you know, you have this new baby, you're supposed to be happy, you're supposed to be joyous, excited, loving, thinking that this child is the greatest thing that ever happened to you. And I didn't experience any of those things.
With either baby or with your...
Well, with the first child, in looking back, retrospectively, I do notice that there was a time when I stopped nursing him, and that was at 6 months, that all of a sudden I felt like an anvil fell on my head. I was severely depressed. And I was able to pull myself out of it because I had some very close friends that I'd met in my prenatal class, and I called them together, and they all came over, and we came up with a mommy's group where we had two moms on with the four kids and two moms off. And we did that every week.
So it seems as if systemically for you, whatever hormones were staving off your depression during the time that you were nursing, that something else kicked in when you stopped nursing. And I, you know what? I've never heard of that before. So did the doctors hear of it before?
I don't think it ever, you know, in retrospectively, I can understand what happened. But at the time, I don't think I could identify it. And certainly no one suggested to me that that could be an issue.
So, okay, so I asked you if people were being patient with you, and you were saying it was hard because you couldn't even identify it. How did you finally identify it?
Well, I had a breakdown, basically. I just absolutely, you know, turned from a very high-functioning woman who could multitask to absolutely not being able to function. And that pretty much did me in.
And did you, and at that point, you started seeing a psychiatrist, or you were seeing one already, or?
I was seeing a psychiatrist, and I wasn't really getting the treatment that I needed, and so that didn't really work out, and then it became so debilitating that I actually went into inpatient treatment.
Let me just say that this is Gail Moskowitz. You're listening to Mental Health Matters. My guest today is Jill Parker, and she's kind enough to come today and talk about her very personal experience with postpartum depression. If you'd like to ask Jill a question today or to call me, please feel free to do so at 649-9737, 649-9737. So Jill's talking about how her postpartum depression came on actually after she stopped nursing. And because she had one son, stopped nursing him, then got pregnant and had another son, that it was really almost like it went on for several years before it really hit her in the face. So you wound up in an inpatient facility.
Yes. Facilities.
Facilities. Here in Richmond?
No.
Okay. And that's okay. I mean, you don't have to say any of that. But tell me what they did for you.
Well, at first, nothing, really. And I kind of got passed around to different treatment centers. And ultimately, I was put on a very good therapeutic regimen. And I felt that, you know, I'm still on that regimen, and it's really been helpful. And then through talk therapy and working out, you know, other issues, it just came full circle.
So you got support, you got medication, you got good talk therapy, you looked at some of the underlying issues, and do you think to some degree also that the hormones shifted back to a more normal state?
Yes. I don't know that they'll ever be normal, but, you know, I'm definitely, you know, high functioning again and taking on my tasks, caring for my children, working. So in that case, yes, it's back to normal. But I just also want to point out that statistically, postpartum depression is shown to occur at a worse severity for each child. So were I to have another child, it really could be very risky in terms of, I would expect it to be worse than the last child.
So you decided not to have another child because of that?
Well, that and the fact that when I hemorrhaged, it was contraindicated.
Yes, I bet that that's true.
But two's enough.
Two's enough. Two's good. And you're very bonded to your children.
Now I am.
Now you are.
At the time, that was a telltale sign that something was really wrong, was that I didn't bond to either child. I felt protective, but I didn't necessarily feel...
In love.
In love or bonding. Very. And that was difficult because people said to me, when you have a baby... They instantly fall in love, and I didn't feel that.
It is something that is perpetuated. It's almost perpetrated on women. You're supposed to fall in love with your baby, and if women don't feel that, they feel guilty, and it becomes part of the process of postpartum depression. I think it's a perfect storm sometimes between the hormones, the exhaustion, the lack of sleep, the lack of support, the ability to be so smart and yet feel so inadequate. And on top of that, for people who don't fall in love with their babies immediately, there are some people who don't have those automatic connections to anyone. There are some people who are slow to get to know people, and then once they do, their connections are very deep. We're all wired differently. So I almost feel like that's perpetrated on women, that this is what you should feel. I don't think there's the same kind of, and please call and correct me if you think I'm wrong, I don't think it's the same thing with men. I don't think we perpetrate that on men, that they have to feel, we give them more time to bond with their kids.
Yeah, I'd agree. And actually, there are statistics that postpartum does occur in men as well.
I've heard that. I've read that. Yeah. I think we're going to have to do a whole other show on that because I don't know anything about it. And
I don't either.
So I want to just say two things that have been in my experience, and then I want you to comment on it. Well, one of the things in my experience is that when I had my daughter, I was married and I had three children in their teens that lived, you know, part of their time at my house and part of the time at their mother's house. I had my stepchildren and I had my husband. I had a full-time job, full as in full with an F, full-time job. And then I had this baby. I was 38 years old. I thought that I was a very, 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 very competent person. And I became so anxious, it wasn't even funny. I couldn't believe it. So I'm going to finish the story in a minute, but we actually have a caller. So this is Gail Moskowitz. Do you have a question for us?
You should be patched in there. Hello? Hey, one second. Let me try to patch you through.
We're working on this. It's our technology of phones.
And I'll just add that it's really the anxiety that can be so debilitating. I found even more than the depression.
Yes.
Can you
yes.
talk really quick? I'm sorry, we're having technical difficulties here. Hello?
I'll tell you what, why don't you let me listen to the question and then I can just say it on the air. Yeah. Hi, this is Gail Moskowitz. Tell me what your question is. The caller wants to know if there's an age associated with more with becoming having postpartum depression. And okay, thank you for the question, and we'll take it. Why don't you take it off the air? Okay, thank you. Do you know the answer to that? Because I don't.
Yeah, I did some research, and what I found is there's certain predispositions to postpartum, and one of the things I found is that. Really, for women who are under the age of 20, who abuse alcohol, recreational drugs, or smoke, the pregnancy wasn't planned, or they have mixed feelings about their pregnancy. Pre-existing depression, anxiety, or bipolar disorder, or even with the pregnancies planned, a stressful event, like I discussed, during the pregnancy or delivery, and just a family member or history in the family of depression or anxiety.
So not so much age-related, but clearly if you're younger, my guess is that you would feel less equipped to take care of this baby.
And I'm going to guess because of that, there's probably a mix of those that fit in. You know, you may not be married, you may be single, trying to raise a baby by yourself, may not have family support. Those are all anxiety-provoking situations, which I'm guessing are not going to help.
I imagine that that would exacerbate postpartum depression. So the anxiety, that was what really just, it took my breath away, really. Clearly bonded with my daughter. I didn't have any of that stuff where I didn't feel in love with her or protective, and I felt all of that. It was very hard for me to drop her off and go to, you know, the caretaker. Even though he was doing a great job taking care of her, it was really hard for me. So I would cry every single day on the way to work. So this went on. And then I had that sunset problem where at 6 o'clock every day I would burst into tears and by 7 I'd feel better. This went on for a year. And then, and I nursed for a year and a half, and I did not like that feeling. It felt very out of control. So then when I've had clients who have been depressed, I have had a really hard time trying to find a psychiatrist to help medicate them. Did you find those problems?
Oh, my goodness. I'm still trying to find a psychiatrist, if there's someone out there.
Did you hear that? If there's anyone out there...
You know, basically at this point, I just need someone for medication management. I feel, you know, like on top of things. But I think, Gail, to your point, you know, I don't know that the depression per se would have sent me to treatment, but the anxiety was so unbearable. I literally could not function. I couldn't be with my children. Everything made me excessively anxious. And that's just not a feeling I think our society is used to recognizing.
That our society is not used to recognizing that women shouldn't be fully equipped to take care of their children. And one of the things I often say to my clients, to my students, is I say to them, we're one species of human being. I mean, we're one species. Human beings are a species of entity in the world that has to learn everything. So little comes up to us by instinct. You know, we have to learn to eat. We have to learn to suckle. We have to learn to go to the bathroom in the appropriate place. And we have to learn how to be parents. We have to learn how to have a relationship with our children. Some of course, comes instinctually, but we have a hard time accepting that that could be a problem. So let me ask you this, okay? You got on some medication, you did that, you're in support, you had got some support. Do you have any resources you might pass on to anyone who might be listening today?
Well, I think, you know, in just doing my own research for the show, because of course I know my own experience, but I wanted to get a better understanding of what's out there, some of the statistics. And, you know, I did a quick internet search, and there were so many resources that came up. So, and I do know that this is a topic that's being better explored. And I know that there's some drugs that they're looking at different indications for, you know, more of these hormonal, you know, it is a chemical imbalance. But I know, you know, Gail, you were talking about as far as learning things. You know, I think the expectation is motherhood is innate. You know, people say they don't come with instruction manuals, but I don't know if people believe that. And I know for me, one of the hardest things was I take my kids to the playground and I felt so inadequate when I saw these other moms with their kids and giggling and they seemed to know exactly what to do. And I felt like I had, you know, I was all thumbs.
I need to say out loud to everybody that feeling inadequate to take care of our children is ubiquitous to humanity. everybody feels that to some degree. Almost everyone. I won't say everyone. Almost everybody feels that to some degree. That one of the things that really sets women up is that if they can't nurse, now you were able to nurse and that helped you, but that women who can't nurse feel so inadequate sometimes that was their fantasy of what it was supposed to look like. Nursing is not an easy thing to do, and it is really important that while you get as much support as you can, and there are all of these good supports out there, there are lactation experts and so many people who can help you. If that isn't possible for your child to latch on, or if it isn't possible for you to make enough milk, you got to move on, and you have to believe that your child is going to survive and have a good life, and it's one piece of her or his life that they need to deal with. So tell me what, and then let me just say two more things, which is, if you're thinking about getting pregnant, get healthy first. If you are using alcohol, if you're smoking, not a time to get pregnant. That's the time to think about what you need to do to make your body a good, healthy place before you move into having children. Having children should be a thoughtful act. It just isn't all the time. So if you do find yourself pregnant, quit smoking, quit drinking. These are things you need to do. Get support. Get all the information you can. Take the classes. Ask for help. Don't feel like you have to be out there by yourself. There are people who can help you. Parenting classes, support, older women who've been through it. Get what you need. Don't be afraid of asking. Any last bits of, because we only have a minute and I need to sign off, so
yeah.
Something you'd like to tell them?
Just quickly, that just ask for help. Don't hide your feelings. It's okay. And if you put it out there, I really believe that you'll find many, many, many women out there who have experienced the same thing.
And I think there are some groups that are being run through some of the local hospitals that you can certainly look up. Brooke Shields brought this to all of us and got this out of the closet, and I appreciate that. How can anybody that beautiful and that competent... Yeah, I mean, she really put herself on the line to talk about her depression. And she wrote a book called Down Came the Rain. And it's an excellent book. And I think that if you are suffering with postpartum depression, it might be a good place to start. This is Gail Moskowitz. You're listening to Mental Health Matters. I thank Jill so much for being here today. Jill, I wish you a happy and healthy new year. And for those of you out there listening who celebrate the Jewish New Year, I wish that to you as well. And I'll see you on the radio next week.
Every life we have some trouble, but when you worry, you make it double. Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, be happy now. Ooh.